What's up, everybody? Welcome to Full Draw Friday number 81. I'm Canyon. That's Austin on the other side of the screen. He's back, finally. It's been a while.
I'm back.
It's good to see you, man. We're excited to get wrapped up with this Natural Brow series, and then we'll figure out something else to talk to, probably strategy related for a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. But I know you've been busy putting in food plots and stuff, so just give us a little bit of update on where you're at with that kind of stuff, and then we'll get back into the Natural Brows talk, and like I said, kind of put a bow on that.
Yeah, I know it's been nonstop. I mean, we were talking before we got on here. I didn't take much of a day off at all in the last month. Just kind of in a time crunch to get it in before the rain came in. We were looking like we were going to get hit with rain earlier than planned, which is great. We've really needed it really bad. Our perennial plantings have been just kind of slow germinating down here, and that's okay. But they're popping. It's all growing. Everything looks good, and there's not a lot of empty spots. They're just in those early stages of the growth. So we've really just needed some really good moisture. And then, you know, with the sun to come in with a little bit more heat, and everything should grow really well after this. So I've got all the perennials done, native grass and clover plots. And I did get a Milo planting done early at my outfitting lease. And the reason I got it in early was just because it's further west. So what, the closer you get to summer, you're not going to get a whole lot of rain out there.
Right.
So summer plantings are real tough out that direction. So I'm like, you know what, as long as it doesn't freeze, it ain't going to hurt it to go in a little early to at least catch this rain. So that's why I kind of rushed it, you know, just worked every day till it was done. And I got everything wrapped up basically the day before the rain rolled in. So it was
perfect.
It was perfect.
Yeah, that's right. That's similar to what we'll do in the fall sometimes here is, of course, the last couple of years has been dry anyway, but if you can catch a rain even like that last week of July, we might go ahead and plant our brassicas and fall plantings just to make sure we catch a rain. So kind of similar to what you're talking about with that Milo. But kind of to go back to not the last Full Draw Friday episode, but two Full Draw Fridays ago when we opened this series, the last one you were on, we talked about what Natural Brows is. And for those of you that missed that, go back and check out number 79. Essentially, it's all the stuff that deer eat that's out there for them naturally, right? So soft mast, hard mast, acorns, fruits, stuff like that. Any kind of leaves that they eat off of plants, could be weeds out in a field in the summertime, any kind of like something like that, it would be considered natural brow. So that's what we're talking about. So this week, I want to talk about how to actually promote that growth and some different strategies and ways that we can do that. And I think a good one to start off with, that's a big one. It was like hot button probably a year and a half ago. Like everybody was talking about it, everybody was doing it, is hinge cutting, right? And there's a lot of good information out there on it. There's a lot of bad information. The process of doing it is fairly simple. There is strategy to how you can do everything. So I want to dive into that first, what hinge cutting is and how it helps promote that growth.
Absolutely. No, I like the practice. It's a good practice and whatnot, to pretty easy way to promote some undergrowth and, you know, create some bedding areas, you know, where you've got, I work a lot of properties in central Missouri where they're really just big woods type properties. You know, a lot of the same vegetation. You've got a lot of big mature oaks, and that's part of the problem. And that's great, but there's too much of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That there's so many oaks that it actually makes it difficult to hunt. That it spreads the deer movement out, and it really just creates this thick canopy that doesn't allow the understory to grow, right? And, you know, obviously planting food plots is a great strategy for creating food, right, on property. But deer require a significant amount of more forage than we even think that they require. So if all you've got is your food plots going into fall and you're waiting for those acorns to drop, you could eat out your food plot before you even get to hunting season.
And
that's something to pay attention to, you know. If it's not growing well, then you probably are getting overgrazed. So I like that I did this on a property in central Missouri with some hinge cutting. It's a smaller property, but everything was the same around it, right? So we needed to create some bedding areas. And the purpose of it, I guess the practice of it, let me explain that, is to start cutting it on a tree about right around what, 4 feet tall, right about that. You pick a tree, 4, 6 inches in diameter or so, something with some backbone, and you cut it just enough to where you can push it over, right? The purpose of it is to not completely cut that tree off. Like you're not girdling it, and you're not trying to kill the tree. You're not clear cutting it. All you're doing is try to lean that tree over and allow that tree to stay in contact enough, still together, where it's actually getting moisture and creating browse on the canopy like it normally would, right? Leaves and whatnot, but it's lower to the ground where deer can actually eat off of it, right? And simultaneously, you're taking that canopy and you're putting it on the ground, which is opening that canopy, which in turn will create browse even underneath that, right? Your understory and whatnot. So it's kind of a two-prong approach where you're bringing the leaves from the top down to the ground where deer can eat it. And then you're also creating sunlight availability to the ground. You're allowing sunlight to get to the ground to create more growth, right? So it's a great way to go about actually creating, not only some food, but bedding areas, right? So you find a place maybe on, you've got a spot on a ridge that bucks are liking to use, but you kind of want to bring them a little bit closer, either in transition or actually bedding onto property, onto your food plot, right? So you can thicken up this area just enough to where they feel comfortable. We're just kind of sneaking in on that spot. There's just below maybe a logging trail, or you've got some mineral in transition from this bedding area improvement up to your food plot. There's different things you can do, obviously to property dependent, but I like the practice. I do think it's because it was a little bit of a fad there for a bit. I think it probably got overused. You know what I mean? I think that's something that we have to be careful with, is you want to stay up to date on new trends, but you don't want to do something just to do it because the internet says it's cool, right? So don't get caught up on the fads and go, because you can't take that cut back. Once you cut that tree, you can't take that cut back. So I would rather take a little bit more of I wouldn't say cautious approach, just a more of a slow approach to it, I guess would be conservative approach to it would be the right word, and go from there. See how deer start using it versus going in and making a big mess of it, everything, and almost actually ruining your property, right? To is so that's something, and that's I talk a lot about working with your property's strengths, and doing with what you can, improving your weaknesses, but only improving so much to where you don't actually take away from the strengths of the property. So no, I mean, in this particular property we did this on, it's that there were smaller hinge cuts. They weren't big widespread hinge cuts, but they were very well placed on ridge sides with benches on them. Deer are already wanting to transition through that. Down the way from a food plot, everything is built in transition up to this food plot, easy access to get in. The wind is right, so Hunter walks in, he's not busting deer out of this hinge cut if they're bedded in order to get in and hunt it in transition.
Well, a couple things on that too is you mentioned it's a good way to do bedding, and I think that's what most people that do it are doing it with bedding in mind. The reason though that it part of the reason it makes such good bedding, because obviously it provides some cover, but you could do that just by dropping trees, right? And that is another option too. Like if you're talking about timber stand improvement, it may not be just hinge cutting. Like there's times where you may not need to hinge cut. You might just need to drop some trees, right? And open up that canopy to promote sunlight, to promote that growth. But if you are hinge cutting, not only are you getting that cover, but you're also creating even more browse for them. And the combination of that really encourages bedding, especially when you, like you said, you do it strategically in the right places. It's not something you want to just spread out and do all over the property, but if you do it where those deer kind of want to be anyway, and you can kind of sweeten it a little bit and entice them to go where you want them, they might move a little bit and start using that for bedding, because it does provide cover and it provides food for them. Because that's the big thing when we're talking about browse, is giving them food inside of cover a lot of times, right? With the exception of like open fields, which we'll talk about in a minute. And even that to some extent, but a lot of it, a lot of natural browse is back within the cover, right? Which is where the deer want to bed, where they're spending most of their time in the daylight. So the hinge cutting is really good for that. And again, promotes the bedding because it provides cover, but also because it provides that browse. One mistake I do see guys make, and a lot of it is because I think they just see, hey, that's cool, I want to try it, and then they just go in there kind of without a plan, and they just start cutting stuff down, right? Like you said, strategic location, but also you got to be strategic in how you're actually laying stuff out in that location, right? You can't just go in there and start laying everything out and then create this big web of trees, because then nothing but the rabbits are going to use it because the deer can't get through it. They have to feel safe in there and secure, but they also need a way in and a way out. At least two different ways in and ways out, right? You can't just tangle everything up where they can't get out of there. So you got to be careful about that too. One thing that we try to do a lot of times is if we can find a bigger tree and lay it down in a certain direction, then we can kind of lay smaller trees on top of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that'll create almost a short canopy in places too. But then it also allows you to give them room to go in and out of there, right? So you're not just dropping stuff completely to the ground everywhere you're going. And then also just making sure that, like, if you're going to drop a row of trees, drop the first one in the right direction first and then try to start there, right? Drop the first one in that row and then go in behind them and drop the rest of them. Otherwise, there's no telling where the next one's going to fall, right? Like, if you can't get them, and sometimes you're going to run into that too. Not every tree is going to fall perfect, but you got to at least try to get them to go where you want to. Otherwise, you can end up with a huge mess. But as far as timber stand improvement goes, I think it's a great way to promote browse, and then obviously bedding as well. And you can combine those two things. You can use it for either one. You can use it for both, in my opinion.
Absolutely. No, and that's a great way to put it, because, you know, I feel like I hear this push on extremely thick locations for bedding and whatnot, and that's not always what I have found to be the best locations that big mature bucks are bedding in. Especially, you know, yes, on public land I'm going after the big thick areas, right? And I want to take that same general idea and bring it into management, right? You're creating a thick, safe area with a lot of food diversity in it, right? But they have to be able to move through it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that you can't just create something, like you said, for the rabbits and the squirrels and the birds. The deer still have to be able to move through it, bed in it, see through it, right? If they can't see a ways, they're still not going to be able to really bed on it, right? Mm-hmm. So that there's multiple reasons they have to feel safe in it, other than just creating this thick web of a mess.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, and then too, you know, we talking about creating diversity, this is a great way to create diversity on your property where there is very little diversity.
Yeah, that's a big thing when it comes to timber stand improvement, just like you said about that one. If it's just all oaks, if it's just all walnuts, if it's just all, maybe it's just all a bunch of honeysuckle and stuff, you go in there and you do this and you're gonna allow other things to grow, and what naturally wants to grow anyway. One thing I will caution, though, if you do have some kind of invasive, whether it be like a Russian olive or was it kudzu down in the south, or honeysuckle, any of those, I would go in that timber and try to get rid of as much of that stuff as possible first, because as soon as you open that up, that stuff's going to completely take over, right? And then while you've been in there trying to create diversity, you've actually hurt yourself, because now you just have one of this invasive, right? So that's something to keep in mind. Don't just go in there and start cutting because we said, hey, it's good for promoting browse. Make sure that you're going to be promoting the right kind of growth. If you have a bunch of invasives, try to get rid of those first, and just know that you're probably going to have to battle that a little bit. And there's a lot of places where you are. Doesn't mean don't do it, but you just got to take the necessary steps before you just start opening canopy, because as soon as you do, they call it invasive for a reason. It grows faster than anything else. As soon as the sunlight hits the ground, that's what's going to come up first. Yep. So you got to get rid of that. And the same goes for like fields and stuff too, right? So we talked about backing the cover a little bit there with hinge cutting's a big one. And then again, just cutting trees down. If you've got junk trees or trees that aren't doing you any good, even if it's like a selective cut, you're trying to get some income off of it as well, you can go in there and do that and just open canopy and allow that growth on the floor of the woods, right? But also you can do this out in fields too, right? Maybe you have an old, it used to be an ag field, now it's gone to nothing. Maybe you've got some CRP that is out of the program or whatever. You've got some open space that you want to do something with. And a lot of guys, I think, will go out there and they'll just start mowing. And that's not really great for browse, right? It's good if you've got switchgrass. It's good if you've got clover in there or alfalfa or something. Because what the mowing is going to do is actually going to kill a lot of what the deer will browse on. The weeds and the woody stuff that they're going to want kind of later in the winter. When you go in there and mow, it's just going to kill all that. And then you're just going to have a grass field, right? One thing you can do, though, is you go in there with some chemical. And depending on what kind of mixture of vegetation you have out there and what you're wanting, you can be a little more selective with it. Or if you're just wanting to start from scratch, you can go in there with just a glyphosate and 2,4-D and just burn it all down, go out there and spray everything that you can, kill it all, and then that's going to act just like opening the canopy in the woods, right? So now you're allowing sunlight to hit the ground. You're allowing all those seeds that have been laying there for years to start growing, and you're going to have more diversity within that field, right? Another way you can do that is if you go in there and you spray it all down, and if you want to speed this process up, burning is a good way to do it, obviously, because you're getting rid of all that junk. And depending on how thick it is, you might have to do that anyway. And then disking is another one too, or light tilling, right? So there are billions of seeds that are just laying under the surface, or like maybe even on the surface, that are just waiting for sunlight and water to grow, right? If they're under this fallow field, though, that's mostly grass and stuff that's not doing you all that good, they're just never going to get what they need to grow. So if you can go in there and either burn it, spray it and burn it, or spray it and come through and lightly disc it, you're just working those seeds up and working them into the soil, creating good seed-to-soil contact and allowing them a chance to get the water and sunlight they need. So now all of that native growth is going to come up now, and you've just created tons of browse per acre, tons of forage for those deer just by either using some chemical or fire or disking or some combination of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's something, you know, we deal with a lot of Lesbodiza out here in Kansas, and that was just something that was in the CRP program, you know, that before they knew it was more of an invasive than it was. So that tends to be something that, you know, once that gets CRP kind of gets out of the program and whatnot, that's something we fight out here, is to try to get that under control so we can promote more of that native, you know, the switchgrass, the Indian grass, you know, the blue stem and different things like that. And then the browse that comes with it, you know, along the ground and whatnot, just trying to get open that up. Cause that Lesbodiza really just creates a blanket.
Yeah.
It just keeps everything shaded out and doesn't allow anything to grow.
Yeah. If you've got a spot too, where, like I said, you want to be more selective. So maybe it's got a decent start on some browse already, but you want to either get rid of the grass in it. Maybe you can use like a Clethodim 2E and you can go in there with just that, and you're not going to kill any of your broadleaf stuff that the deer are going to browse on. So I think we've talked about this maybe even in the last episode, but if your deer are eating grass, it's probably because there's not a lot of other stuff out there for them, right? So grass is not really a desirable vegetation if you're talking about feeding deer. You see a lot of fescue in a lot of places, even some types of switchgrass or just some natural growing grasses. That's not really going to benefit your deer if you're trying to grow it for food, right? Now, cover's a different story. If you're screening, obviously, they're good, can be good for that. But when it comes to browse, you're not looking for grasses. So you can go in with a Clethodim and actually spray that, and that'll take care of your grass, and then it'll allow more of that, the broadleaf and the weeds to come up, and some of those smaller trees, shrubs and things like that, that the deer are actually going to eat on. So that's something you can do as well to be a little more selective if you have something you already like. It's also not going to kill like your clovers if you've got some natural clover growing up, which you'll see a lot of times in those open fields, right? We've done some in the past where we've been planning on doing a food plot for somebody. Initial plans to go in, wipe it all out, disc it, put in clover, but we get out there and there's so much clover already started. It's like, we're just going to mow this, spray the grass out of it, and then we'll come in and frost seed it. And then it's actually turned out to be a successful clover plot that way and saved some money on the front end just because there's already so much clover there. So you're going to see that in places too. So that's another option as well. If you're in those open areas, it's the same way though. If you have invasives, make sure you get rid of them first. Don't just resort to mowing, right? And this is something that you're going to want to look at every, you know, 3 or 4 years, because what's going to start to happen after those 2-3 years is those weeds are eventually going to die, because they do, they're annuals, right? And then the grasses, the perennials, are going to outgrow them, and then you're going to end up with a lot of grass and a lot of saplings that are too big to do you any good, right? In year 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. So this is something, if you're looking for promoting that browse, you got to keep it on rotation of not just mowing, but you might have to go in there and mow it and then spray it and start over again, right? But it's still relatively cheap, especially when you're talking versus maybe doing a food plot. And maybe that's something too. Maybe you have a spot that you think would be great for a food plot, but you can't afford it. Maybe this, because seeds, I mean, seeds expensive, fertilizer's expensive, all that kind of stuff. If you just want maybe a little bit more cost-effective way to give them something, it's not going to last as long into the year, obviously, as a brassica plot. But this is an option too. Chemical, while it is more expensive than it was, it's still cheaper to just use chemical than it is to actually spray it and then go in with the food plot seed and then go in with the fertilizer and all that kind of stuff, right, every year. So if you do that once every 2 or 3, 4 years, then obviously it's going to be more cost effective. It gets them a lot of browse throughout the early part of the season and some into the later season, depending on what you have growing. But there's ways to do it in the timber. There's ways to do it in the field. But overall, like we talked about on the last one, you have to have browse on your property in order to hold deer.
Absolutely. No, and you need a lot of it. Mm-hmm. A lot more than you think.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's if you have a large property, obviously you have a ton of space that you can do a lot of different things with. You know, you can implement a lot of different strategies to create a diversity actually on property and create an entire ecosystem. And if you have a smaller property, you've got to do with what you've got. You know what I mean? Work with the strengths of your property. Don't just hinge cut because it's cool. Don't add a water hole because it's cool. Mm-hmm. Work with the strengths of your property. Add what you need to add, you know what I mean, to create the diversity needed, and make your property different than the neighbors, right? Make it something different than what is happening in the surrounding area. It could be as simple as, this isn't browse related, but hunting smarter and using your property smarter. It could be that simple. You know what I mean? That could be the only thing that you have to do with your property, is just be smarter about how you use it and how you hunt it. And those bucks are going to choose your property over your neighbors because they feel safer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, and then when it comes to creating food and browse and bedding diversity, you know, look at what's going on in the surrounding property. If you're surrounded by food, maybe adding food is not the right choice, mm-hmm. right? If you're surrounded by nothing but woods, well, maybe you can implement these hinge cuts and food plots, and you can add food and give them a little bit of a draw to increase the amount of time that they spend on your property. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, but again, don't add something that takes away from the current strength of your property. You can hurt your property for what the deer are. They're using it already for a reason. Figure out that reason first, and then don't hurt that. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. So increase the potential of your property without decreasing the overall value of what you already have on property.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's huge for especially smaller properties that most of the guys that are going to be in this situation have, right? 10 to 80 acres, we'll call it. Yep. And even you could go a little bit higher than that in places. But those guys that are, you know, 20, 40, 80 acre guys, that's huge. You got to know what's around you. You have to know the strengths of your property, the weaknesses, and absolutely come up with a plan based on that. I think that's super important to take away from any series that we're going to talk about when it comes to habitat management or deer management or whatever. A couple things to wrap this one up, and part of it is going to tie into that a little bit. The first one, we're going to go, like I said, we're doing kind of these series on habitat management. So we're not like, don't take this as us saying, you have to do natural browse, and then that'll solve all your problems, right? This is just a piece of the puzzle. So all the stuff that we're going to talk about throughout the off season is going to be stuff that you need to look at and decide whether you need to do for your property or not. It's not just one thing. Hey, if I do this, I mean, you might get lucky and that might be the one thing your property's missing, but don't just think that because we're talking about this now, like it's the only thing you got to do. We're going to talk about a lot of other things that overall create the bigger picture. This is just, like I said, a piece of the puzzle.
Piece of it.
Yes. The other thing I want to hit on before we wrap this one up is, and we may have talked about it last week, but I think it's worth mentioning again, to kind of help with that, figure out if it's what you need to do. Because browse can be a tough one, right, to figure out. Because you're just looking out there in the woods and you see a lot of green and you think, well, I'm good. You know, it's hard to get cameras back in there to see if the deer are actually eating on it or not. If you're not walking it at the right time of year, and even if you are, you may not be able to see where they're actually nipping buds off of plants and weeds and stuff like that. So how can you actually tell if your deer have enough browse or not? I mentioned one of them a second ago. If your deer are eating in an open grass field, and like there's no clover, no alfalfa, no weeds in it, you probably have a browse issue, right? Because there's not enough other nutrition for them. They're just trying to eat anything they can that's green, and they're resorting to grasses. Another way, if you have food plots and you can't seem to get them to grow, but you think they should be growing, put a cage out there or something. If you're getting tons and tons of browse pressure on a food plot that's even a quarter acre, right, and they're just not letting it grow, high potential you have a browse issue in your area, right? Because they're just pounding that food plot for basically their only nutrition, aside from maybe the ag fields they're feeding in at night, right? So those are definitely ways. And then another kind of easy one is, especially like this time of year where stuff's starting to green up, if you go out to where you're hunting and you can see across the timber, like if you've got timber on your property and you can just see straight across it, like right now when stuff should be starting to get pretty green, there's not enough there for them. You may have a ton of oaks. You might have a bunch of acorns on some years, but a lot of other years you're not. And aside from that, they can't only eat acorns, right? Like the way their stomach works and the way they digest stuff, they need other stuff as well. So even if you do have a bunch of oaks, just like you were talking about before, create that diversity. If you can see straight across your timber, that's another good way to figure out, hey, I probably need to do something to improve this browse. But there's a few things kind of that you can look at to start deciding whether you need to actually implement this to see if it is a weakness on your property, if it is a strength on your property. Maybe you already have a ton of natural browse. You need to work on something else. Maybe it's a little bit more cover. Maybe it's winter thermal cover. Maybe it is different types of food, water, whatever it is. There's a lot of things that we'll talk about. But those are some ways you can look at, see what it is on your property, if you need to improve it. We talked about ways you can improve it today. I think we'll leave it right there. You got anything else to add before we get out of here, man?
I don't think so. I think we hit it on the nail pretty good. And you said it perfectly right there. You know, don't just do it just because we say it's a good idea. It might not be a good idea for your property. So, you know, everything that we do, there's a lot of tools in our toolbox. And rarely do we use most of those tools on a single property. It really just depends on the property that we visit, what its strengths are, what its weaknesses are, what the client, you know, what the landowner really wants from the property. You know, there's a lot of variables that go into choosing the right approach to that property, you know, and this is just a couple tools in our toolbox that we use.
Yep, absolutely. Before we do get out of here, guys, don't forget about our partners for Full Draw Friday. Racks Big Game Supplements, you guys can check them out. RacksMineral.com, they've got protein blocks, they've got minerals, they've got feed. All that stuff, you guys can check it out. Also, Rodney Hawkins, RG Outdoors on Facebook. That's his business where he's got Tacticam trail cameras, he's got Fission e-bikes, he's got all kinds of stuff from Radix Hunting. He's going to start carrying Grandpa Ray Outdoors food plot seed as well. So go check him out there. He's also a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land, and you guys can look them up too. If you're into buying or selling any kind of real estate throughout Illinois and the Midwest, you guys can go look at that website. Give Rodney a call, 618. I'm going to mess up the number. I'll just put it in the comment. I'll put it in the description. I had it for a while, but I want to give out the wrong number. And then let me get the date right for this. I do want to update you guys on something that we've talked about on previous podcasts with Drew Kaczynski from the BHA. They are finally opening their archery park to the public at Lake Shelbyville. That'll be May 16th through May 18th. So that whole weekend, these guys are hosting an event for the grand opening of the Lake Shelbyville Archery Park. If you guys are in the area, we went up there, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before now, when we did a podcast up there. It's an awesome park. They've even made improvements to it since then with some concrete and some trails and things like that. But if you guys are going to be in the area, I know it's going to be an awesome event, so make sure you check that out. For Austin, I'm Canyon. See you guys later. We appreciate you tuning in.